Clean Water Commission meeting, March 5th.
We've got
Hey.
Call it to order.
Call the Clean Water Commission meeting to order for March 5th, 2014. We're going to go around, and we've got our new commissioners here, or we've got, we're missing one, right? Where's our...
Melanie.
Huh?
Melanie.
Melanie is another new person.
Okay.
She said she'll be here tonight. I can't speak for Brian, Virginia, and right. Susan said they'll be coming tonight.
All right, so we'll start with the, we'll go ahead and get, start with these introductions. There may be other introductions a little later in the meeting to some of the people who haven't shown up. We'll have to handle that later because we have a relatively full agenda and we need to get moving on. So I'd like to welcome everybody. Jim Carlson, I am the chair of the Clean Water Commission at this, for right now. And I'm going to pass around the sign-in sheet. Let me sign around, sign up, sign in it. Each one of our meetings. So with that, I'm going to pass this over here, and let's start with some introductions, and start there, a little brief history, why you're here. And
Sure, my name is Rob McKinney. I've lived in Clark County now for 5 years. Really, my wife and I love it a lot. I'm president and CEO of Seaboard Airlines, just across the river in that other state. But anyway, just decided it was time for me to get involved with the community and wanted to pitch in and do my fair share. And this is something that's near and dear to me that we keep our water clean, so here I am.
Perfect. Thanks, Bob.
Dick? I'm Dick Rylander. I've lived in Clark County two different times, over a little over 20 years combined. We moved back about 8 years ago. Prior to that, never been involved. We live on 5 acres just outside of Battleground. Part of it's a Category 3 wetland. I've been involved all the time I've lived in Clark County in front of county commissioners, city councils on various topics and issues. I've got 9 grandchildren, and I expect that many of them will live their lives out in Clark County, and I'd like to make sure it's a great place to live. One of the things we need to do right is make sure they got good clean water.
Perfect. Thanks, Dick. Gary?
Gary Schaefer. I moved down here. My wife and I moved down here. We retired from Boeing up in Everett, and we lived in Bothell, actually. But I spent 32 years in Boeing as a mechanical engineer and as a manager, and as in airline supports, out working with the airlines around the world. And we moved down here and found it to be just a wonderful place to live. I'm here because I really believe that the kind of, it's incumbent upon us to do our best to hand over this world to our children and grandchildren in the best shape we can. And so that's my driving goal, is to make sure that do whatever I can do to contribute to handing the world over and being proud of what we hand over to our kids.
Maybe we didn't do such a good job when we were in charge of it, right? Back a little bit.
Yeah.
We could always make a few improvements on that. David?
Hi, I'm Dave Meyer, and I moved my family up from San Diego about 5 years ago, but my brother and his family and my mom, they've lived up here since the late 1980s, and we thought that it would be a good time to come back closer to family. My background is in environmental compliance and permitting. I consult with a company across the river, EORM. My background is heavy on the industrial and wastewater as well as stormwater management side. So I felt with my background in watershed management that I brought up from San Diego and some of the work that I do here as well, that I can contribute especially from a technical perspective on the Clean Water Commission. So I look forward to being able to serve.
Great. Thank you. So, Melanie isn't here yet, does she?
Yeah, but introduce the guest.
We'll go to the guest, but when Melanie gets here, we're going to give her a chance to do her introduction, and of course we have our record. So, we'll go from right to left, left to right. Here, somebody can start down there. As far as our guest.
Kelly Uhas from the city of Battleground. Jeff Rossman, HDG Design Group.
Art Stubbs, representing NAC.
I'm Ron Weir. I'm on the county's clean water. I'm the county's clean water program manager.
One more down.
One more down.
Hi.
And I'm we got our back there.
Yeah, hi, I'm Todd Hornstein with the Vancouver School District.
I'm Jennifer Halleck, also with the Vancouver School District.
I'm the student design director
of
facilities with Evergreen School District.
Oh, perfect. Okay, at this point, Oh, Brian.
Hi, Brian Peck, Clean Water Commission.
Almost forgot you. Yeah.
What do you do, Juan?
I'm in mine. I own a gas station.
Whereabouts?
78 St. John's. And I have one of those swells that I maintain.
With a fence around
it. With a new fence around it.
I did. I drove past there.
Yeah, it's
I was going to turn into your gas station. I do not enter on that road. So
you don't turn left?
I went to the other place.
Plan ahead.
Plan ahead.
Okay.
Melanie? Welcome, Melanie. I'm Jim Carlson. I'm the chair on the Clark County Clean Water Commission.
So nice to meet you.
So nice to meet you. You came in just in the right amount of time to introduce yourself and tell a little bit about yourself.
Okay. My name is Melanie Wheeler. I've worked for Clark County for 15 years. I've got two kids, Margaret and Chancellor. I have some experience working with the government on a variety of different levels and working in Salem and for different senators and state representatives. My father worked in the timber industry. I went to 12 schools growing up working with a variety of different people, both the environmentalist sort and the business sort. And here I am.
And here you are. Well, welcome. Welcome aboard. So, now, we're on the review the packet info here.
So in tonight's packet of information, this is the March 5th meeting of the Clean Water Commission. So item one in your packet is basically the agenda. We do this every meeting. We talk about the packet materials. So the first item is...
So go to March.
Go to the March tab in your folder. You'll find the agenda. And we also have another item in the agenda. We try to review, or we do review, the meetings from the past session. So we have an opportunity to talk about that, review those. Another item that we'll talk about a little later is we're going to be electing a vice chair for this group because the vice chair is no longer here. So we need to select a vice chair and get going on that. Another thing we'll have to do later on, too, is we'll have to select a member to represent this group on what's called basically the Stakeholders Advisory Committee, which is an MPDS permit function, which is clean water related. So we'll have to have a representative from this group. It's basically a citizens advisory group. There's a technical group, and there's a citizen advisory group. So we'll be looking at somebody from this group to represent you on the technical, or excuse me, on the SAC.
How often does that advisory group meet?
SAC? They meet periodically. There's a schedule. They're going to be meeting. We're going to be meeting next Thursday. That'll be like the fourth meeting of that group. And there's the technical group that's going to be meeting more frequently. Go over what are some of the aspects of the permit. Ron Wyringer in the back of the room will talk more about that later on.
So, we've got to approve our meeting summary from last month. I don't see anybody here who really.
Just you and Brian.
Brian wasn't here.
I missed last month.
Or 2 months ago.
I was there the month before.
So, I guess I get to approve it and second it, don't I? And say all in favor, aye. Because it doesn't really have any influence on anybody else.
I think Robert's Rules of Orders might say something different, though.
Yeah. It possibly could. But there we go. Now we have the other two people.
So, actually, in this case, it's Jim's Rules of Orders.
Yes.
In this case.
Well, actually, no. Susan and
we're
Virginia
good
were here.
Now. Good. Right.
I said that.
Virginia and Susan, we're introducing ourselves down the table here. So, when you are settled in, please take a moment to introduce yourselves respectively to the rest of the members of the Clean Water Commission.
I'm Susan Rasmussen. I
live out in the La Center area, actually in between La Center and Battleground, off of 1899. We were third generation dairy farmers. And I also taught ballet and modern dance here at Clark around the area. And I represent the interests of the agriculture community and the commission. I've been here since we were a stakeholder group organizing, so probably about 15 years. With Arch. And Earl.
And I'm Virginia Van Bremen, and I've lived in my current home for 31 years. And back here around 2000, I took the watershed class.
We've been a member of the Farm Forestry, the Clark County Farm Forestry Group for years.
Yes, since before that time. And I took two other classes too. One was the forestry management one, and the other one was habitat. All of these things, and then I saw the other one day, well, there's this thing in the paper about this meeting, it's in clean water. So I came up and I came to this meeting for, I don't know, months, I guess. Finally, one day there was no meeting, and I've been here ever since. I have 30 acres, so I'm, of course, interested in what's going on. It's got a creek in it, and wetlands, and it's got a lot.
Thanks, Virginia. So, where we're at now, we had some introductions earlier on there, because I want to start the meeting on time because we've got a fairly full agenda on it. And hopefully after the meeting gets over here, we can all sit around and talk for a few minutes. But we need to keep moving through on this. Where we're at now is in the March section there. We're at the approval of meeting summary. And since there's only three of us from who were at the meeting before, we need to go over that. Susan and Virginia, please help me with this and approve it if we can.
In March.
Go to March. And we'll see that in there. Take a quick review of it. And if we can move to approve that.
This is a very nice presentation.
To accept the minutes
as presented
from last meeting.
Okay.
Virginia, do you approve it?
When do they approve
it?
Second
minutes.
Sure.
Yeah, sure. Okay, it's been moved and seconded and approved for the minutes of the last meeting. Okay. Now we go to public comment. We have lots of public out here today. So, would anybody from the public like to make some comments to the Clean Water Commission?
That work.
Okay.
Perfect.
Yes.
All right. He's spot on.
No. Thank you. Well, thank you for the opportunity. Again, my name is Todd Hornsey, and I'm Assistant Superintendent for Facility Planning for the Vancouver School District, and a representative from Evergreens is here tonight as well, actually commenting on behalf of Clark County School Districts. We do have a consortium of facility folks that do come together to help address facility and planning issues with the county as a collective voice, so it's a little bit easier for us and for commissions like you to process concerns that that the districts have. The concern I wanted to talk about today has to do with the waiver program that has been in place for many years, I think since the beginning, regarding stormwater. And for the, I know there are several new members on the commission, so just for sake of just brief history, about almost 2 years ago, the question about retaining the fee waiver was brought to the table to go before a recommendation to go before the Board of County Commissioners to the viability of retaining that fee waiver. We spent time working with this commission and staff regarding the waiver and the value of the waiver and what that provided back to the county in terms of school district educational activities that were provided in the classrooms, as well as a major maintainer of on-site storm of water quality components that we've developed our site. At the conclusion of that process, it was this commission's belief that the value was still present and recommended to the Board of Commissioners that the fee waiver remained intact and in place. However, there were concerns expressed actually jointly from both districts and the commission that the preserving the waiver really required a little more clarity into what was occurring at the school districts and how that could be measured and assessed. So following that that decision, we sat down with the county staff and worked through how we go about determining what measures the school districts are implementing in order to justify the waiver. So out of that process, we developed a three-year work plan, so to speak, that the districts would work on specific components for both clarity and consistency among the county school districts, and WSU actually as well. It's so that we could speak to how the waiver is supported. We are in year three of the two-year period. We've been making good progress on all of the steps in place. The third year, this final year, was to implement the clean water or the water quality program from Washington schools, which we're in the process of complying this year. So all this seems to be going well. We still believe that there's value in the program, the value of the work that the districts provide for education, community-based education out of the classroom. This January, we received a letter from Mr. Benton stating that the fee waiver will no longer be applied and that the school districts will be receiving their share of the bill for the stormwater fee. Absent any prior conversations with that, I responded to Mr. Benton in a letter of concern, shared with him the history and some correspondence that I just spoke about because I know he's new to the county and to his position, and asked that we had an opportunity to meet and discuss this change of policy, and rather abrupt change of policy. We were scheduled to meet last week, but his schedule, Olympia, didn't provide for that, so that meeting was canceled. But the message, I did talk with him by phone, and his message was that there was really nothing that he could do. His hands were tied, and the fee would be assessed. So in discussing that with colleagues from the school district, we felt it was necessary and important to bring the issue further to the table. Quite frankly, I don't even know if this commission is aware of the change in policy or the communications that were received. We believe it's within your purview to recommend fee changes to the board. So we wanted to circle back, have an opportunity. Unfortunately, you were having to be meeting within the next couple of days to come back to you to express our concerns about preserving the waiver and, quite honestly, how it was rather an abrupt process that we were notified that we no longer could take advantage of the waiver. There's also some functional issues that get in the way here, one of which is we are in a different budget cycle than the county, so we have budgets in place from September 1 through August 31st. We don't have really any way to pay those fees and budget them without capturing the budget for them. So we won't be budgeting until, well, we're budgeting starting now for next school year, which starts in September. So at the very least, we believe that the fee should be delayed until it is in fact going to be enacted, until we can budget properly. But we still believe that the good value to retain that fee is only have that compensation. The at this point, there are a few options for the districts. I know for Vancouver, this I can't speak for the other districts, is we will be appealing that fee since it, the bill has been sent to us. We want to preserve our rights to be able to process that. So at this point, we're not in a position to make that, that fee payment. And we'd really like the opportunity to process this in a little more thoughtful way. And that's our purpose of being here today, is to spread awareness. We're more than happy to work with staff, whomever is appropriate, to further the discussion, but wanted to make you aware of the current situation.
Tom, what kind of financial burden are we talking about in this
place? Well, the, I can speak for Vancouver specifically. The school district fee is calculated to be roughly $45,000, which, of course, right or wrong, is the salary of a teacher. Represents that level to us.
Does that come out of the maintenance, out of your maintenance?
Comes
bill?
Out of our general fund, operating fund.
Maintenance comes out of that, too?
Yes. Okay. Yeah.
This is going really again. Have any of the other commissioners heard about this change of policy?
Tom Melke, when I interviewed for the told me that the schools and WSU, that they were, the waivers were not going to be granted anymore. That they were, you know, that was causing. They pointed out the, you know, large difference between what we're spending and what we're bringing in, you know, with the fees. And it's, that, and that's what, he shared that with me in my interview to answer your questions.
I'd heard the same thing during mine, and comparatively speaking, in reflection on fees, Clark County really has not raised their fees in many years, not just with the Clean Water Commission, but as a whole. It's not surprising regarding today's economy and the economic situation. We're really not in a position to keep our funds where we were 15 years ago. We don't do it in our homes. We don't do it in our own personal budget cycles. How so then, comparatively speaking, if you were taking the fees from 15 years ago, what common dollars would that then be today? So.
Well, I mean, we've heard rumblings about, I've heard rumblings about for a long time. The makeup of the Board of County Commissioners right now probably is not going to be very conducive to raising any type of fee, even though the fee is extremely reasonable, whatever. You know, we've watched, if you look at the budget on how the Clean Water Fund has went, it's went from having a surplus, you know, building up to be basically, you know, we're bringing in $5 million, it costs us $10 million to maintain all this. So it's, yeah, I would sit there and do whatever type of appeals you could on this. Where I'm going, would think you would have to go with it.
I'd be interested in hearing what the full fiscal impact is to the county, not just from Vancouver schools, but Evergreen School District and the other school districts that would possibly pay into that fee were it to be rescinded.
What's the value of the exemption?
And what the value is of the exemption, which, you know, clearly right here in the funding mechanism, it's all laid out.
Yeah, but we consider historically the schools to be a cohort with us in education and outreach to the community, and that's a tremendously valuable asset, especially in the light of that we've lost the watershed Stewards program. And that's a requirement, the education and outreach program of the NPDES permit that we're required to abide by those rules and regulations written down in that permit, and that it's clearly defined in that permit, the education and outreach.
I would like to ask, you talked about some mitigation programs that you're already installing in schools that presumably your own expense. And with that mitigation, I don't know what your costs have been in that, but do you have any idea, for instance, just for your school district, what the impact has been on funds that would have been spent had you not done that versus, you know, what your load would be spent now that you've instituted the mitigation programs?
I don't know if I can give you an exact figure. I can certainly research that for you. I can describe, however, all of any recent developments, school developments. We retain all stormwater on site, treat and dispose of stormwater on site, parking, impervious surfaces, including the public right-of-way at our frontage. So the half-width road, street and sidewalks and that part also are mitigated by the school district property. So I think to the point earlier that we understand the financial burden of the county and the school district are in the same boat. That's part of why we're arguing strenuously for the waiver. But I think they are separate issues. The budget situation versus our request, because we are providing that component of the requirement that we are providing on-site mitigation for any of our own water plus a portion of the county water. And in exchange for that is what drove the waiver to begin with. Mm-hmm. So there's value we provide if the county were to withdraw the waiver and provide all of the educational activities, I'm not sure they can match the outreach that the school district are providing just by the nature of the captive audience for the same amount of money. So it might actually cost the county more. I mean, I haven't researched that, and I don't have that from numbers, but I can get back to the commission with what our costs are to maintain all of our swales and turn all the treatments on site.
And the education.
Yeah.
And the education. So, okay, I think that would be valuable to know that, you know, here's what we've done to reduce those costs, and it's not like we haven't done anything.
A couple questions if you might be just want to understand.
Sure. We also just do provide a report to this commission each year about how the funds were spent. So in previous years, there are reports.
It's historical.
Yes, it's been historical. Every school district participating does. But there's not a cost specifically valued toward that, but that would be
time and effort.
Yeah.
Time and effort, yeah.
Right. So science kit materials, those kind of things.
That was one of the issues that we discussed with the county 3 years ago when we implemented the program, because each district reported a little bit differently. They were just not consistent. And so the three things that came out of that meeting were, one, we had to have 100% compliance with all of our stormwater facilities, bioswales, everything had to be in compliance in order to get the fee waiver. The other thing was we had to train our custodial staff, maintenance, bus drivers, transportation about best management practices, and the county actually came out and provided that training in separate, for us it was a couple separate afternoon sessions, about an hour, you know, not, don't dump your soapy water down the drain, make sure you have oil water separator, that kind of thing. And we all agree, and says that those are best practices, and we were happy to get on board with that. I think for Evergreen, the most challenging one was the Washington Green Schools, trying to get the schools to comply with the Washington Green Schools program. The water quality is probably one of the more challenging ones. Most of our schools have done, there's five steps, they've done the energy one, but part of our resource conservation efforts are to let kids know that the county is waiving the fee because of the work that we're doing. And I would hate to have to go back and report to them that the county changed their mind. They're not waiving the fee even though you did the work.
How much is there, what would the cost be for, Vancouver said, Mr. Hornstein said, $45,000. What is Evergreen?
$24,000.
Yours is $24,000.
And I think we're the two largest districts in the county. Ridgefield is $1,200 or $1,500. And I don't think Ridgefield particularly is about
$20,000. Total receivable, this is budgets my area. So the total receivable for us for clean water fees is about $125,000 plus or minus.
We're all waiting.
For all schools, including private schools and churches.
And the university as well.
It's
is it $125,000?
It represents, for our 2014 receivable, it represents about 2.5% of our expected revenue.
Are churches going to be eliminated too?
The school fee waiver is gone for and so churches are charged anyway. I mean, it is a side story, but churches are charged anyway as a category 4 parcel. They have educational facilities that provide those. They were eligible for the school waiver. They're no longer eligible.
And what I know you said that Mr. Benton said his hands were tied. I don't know whether that was a direct quote or not, but I'd be interested to find out what the county's justification is for dropping this waiver. What sort of, you're talking about 2.5% of expected revenue, and while I understand that the county's fiscal issues are tight right now, I'd like to understand a little bit more about what the county's justification is for this, other than just saying it's gone.
So when did the letter come out?
January 7th.
And it was set, taking effect?
February 1st.
February 1st.
We've
just
got our
April 1st. So 11 months early. Right? I mean, you
have
to pre-year waiver.
A month later. The next
month.
No.
I mean, it would have gone through. You were expecting that you were exempt all of this year.
Yeah, we were expecting the waiver to be ongoing. There was no sunset of the waiver.
There was no sunset.
Based upon we were shoring up the...
Right.
But at a minimum for your budgetary... Your expectation through this school, the bulk of the school year,
yes.
That their waiver would be in place.
And the waiver, if you didn't comply with all three components, if we didn't do the training or not all of our stormwater facilities met the standard, then we would be discounted by that proportionate amount. You know.
As part of your appeal process, are you claiming now with your mitigation process and your investigation process that you kind of
Gary, can you speak up a little because we have
a recorder. I'm sorry.
We can't hear you over here, Gary.
All right. Pretty quiet. I'm sorry. Forget. Right? Are you saying, you know, with your mitigation process and your education process and everything you've done, that you feel as part of your appeal process, your claim, are you claiming that you have a zero impact now?
Well, we haven't structured the appeal yet. We barely had time.
I mean, part of your presentation was your mitigation process.
Yes.
So I'm just trying to find out if that's part of your rationale for your appeal is, hey, we have a zero impact because of what we've done, therefore we deserve a waiver. I mean,
that would be a significant component of it.
Okay.
I think it's also the partnership that had been developed, I use that term loosely, not legally, mm-hmm. between the districts and the county and the commitment for a 3-year work plan to get to a level of acceptance for the mitigation and time and effort. All that was all underway and without any sense of that it was just going to be turning.
So you found out just by receiving a letter in the mail?
Yes.
No notification for planning, no.
I'm so sorry. That's just not a good way to do business.
Oh, it'd be shocking.
Yes, unexpected.
Right. Mm-hmm. So.
Yes, there had been always talk about the waiver, but there was no that you're going to terminate the waiver.
Well,
so
we had a report about a year ago. When was it? When was that? Art?
It was just about almost 2 years ago. Now we went through all of the school districts, and they all. Submitted reports on the amount of money that the Clean Water Commission is saving by allowing them to do a clean water program within school districts. The other aspect of it was, in the original task force, the schools were exempt from putting in a clean water program or a conservation program, education program as part of the school curriculum, in that if the schools were charged for a clean water fee, what it amounts to is each of us as homeowners or taxpayers would be making up the difference on our property tax. So it would be, in effect, taking money out of one pocket and putting it into the other. If the school districts are shorted $100,000 on their budget, where are they going to get it from? In the event that the clean water program was to fall short on their monetary systems, this board has recommended to the county commissioners that the annual fee for the clean water program be increased. It has not been increased for 15 years. It's held at $33 a year. We are one of the lowest in the entire nation. And in holding public forums and public meetings around, one of the first questions asked when you present your budget to them is, so why don't you bring the fee up to the standard that it should be? As a representative of the Neighborhood Association Council for Clark County, this has been presented to them many times, and all are in favor of exempting the schools. That's your problem.
So if you could, this group, what would you want?
Well, our request, first of all, is that the decision to waive the fee be tabled until there's an opportunity to have further discussion about the merits of retaining the fee or not retaining the fee and determining the value, the actual value that we return back, so that a decision could be made based upon the conversation, not just because the fund is short, because the fund is short. That doesn't seem like the rationale, proper rationale.
Mr. Horstein, do you know what other counties who do? Well, maybe Mr. Art can address this specifically. Other counties that have clean water commissions. Do they?
We're unique in having this commission here in our county. We may be the only.
Okay.
Clark County made this commission as part of an ordinance after a task force when the program was initially set up to establish the criteria for the NPDES permit.
From what I understand, you're one of the founding people?
Yes.
Good. So you're a good resource.
Pardon?
You're a good resource then, yes?
It's very valuable to this commission.
Susan was also there.
Yeah.
So when you say that your belief that Clark County's fee structure is on the bottom end, how is that... Is there something that's an average or something that is a norm that you're aware of?
I think your staff can bring you up to date on what the average fees are around the country or what for the entire state for that matter.
Or Pacific Northwest.
Right? Yeah.
Or for the Northwest.
Yeah.
You could use a number of $100 and it would probably be roughly in there. It would be in there.
Which would be roughly triple what it is.
Roughly triple. So, therein lies a little bit of what the problem is.
Yeah, I think what you'll find is across the Northwest, when you start looking at jurisdictions that we are part of, we are called Phase 1 permittees, which is just a fancy term saying we were some of the first people to do what is implementation of Clean Water Act measures. And so folks like us, their fee ranges from about $90 to $100 to $220, depending on what jurisdiction you're talking to. If you're talking about just jurisdictions which are Phase 2s, Clark County, which includes Vancouver, Battleground, Camas, and Washougal, they came in later in the process, but their fee ranges from about $90 to $160 per year. Ours is $33 per year.
And I should say, we do pay, we don't have a waiver in the city of Vancouver.
That's the point, too. That's another issue. So, my question back to you guys, as in your school district, is you don't have a waiver from the city of Vancouver. I don't think you have any schools out in the Washougal area because they don't allow for a waiver either. So, in the Vancouver School District, what do you pay to the Vancouver School?
About $168,000 a year.
And what do you think?
I haven't been focused on that.
And that's evergreens?
Mm-hmm. We have most of our schools. We have already have eight in the county. The rest are in the city.
How many schools do you have? We're probably comparable, I would say.
So what I'm hearing,
half our schools are in the city's half.
So what I heard was roughly about $160,000 to be paid to the city of Vancouver.
$168,000,
I think is what we.
I think it's important to note, though, why there was no waiver provided for by the city, and that's because of the Water Resources Center.
Mm-hmm.
That facility was constructed in part for the purpose of providing educational programs to the community, of which we bring school children to that center for significant programs throughout the year. That opportunity is provided to us. It doesn't exist in the county because the county doesn't have a facility. So that that mitigates, if you will, the cost of our participating in the waiver in the free program. We get the return back because they provide the education
component. I think Susan hit on the educational component of the NPPES permit. That's a big, when you look at cost per person to educate them about water, clean water, you know, we do have a captive audience. And
we do, and you are. The schools are a tremendous resource for the county, and I truly mean it that you have been just a strong cohort in helping us to achieve that community education and outreach that is required in this permit. And I'd like to address, if all of you new members could go to the pledge. And in big bold letters at the bottom, it says, cultivating a clean water culture through trust and cooperation. And it goes right against the pledge of the commission. And that's what I'm concerned.
So, second tab back.
We hear you. Okay.
We don't question
that. So, the
greatest cost for the very serious.
We can make a recommendation as a group. We can get together and come to some sort of consensus on some sort of recommendation that we could make to the board. I don't know which way that would go. And we could. That's something that's possible for us to do. It's not going to, because of the agenda tonight, that's not going to happen tonight on here.
Can I make a motion?
Sure.
I so move that the members of the Clark County Clean Water Commission write an opinion and a statement and take it to the Senator Benton with a notation of our pledge on it.
So,
with our discussion.
Okay.
Or are we discussing making some blanket statement from the commission here also? Or are we kind of like, you know,
We'd have to come together with a statement together.
And we don't have that.
Yet. We don't have that time right now. And
right.
The other thing what I'd bring up on it is now. Don Benton sent the letter out, but this is directly a result of a board decision. Okay, that's probably because that's the way the hierarchy works in here. So, I mean, if we're going to put a recommendation together and have some discussion about it, put some together over possibly maybe at the next meeting, what we have, then it would probably go to the Board of County Commissioners. I'm fully agree on working on that and putting together something that we do come to consensus on and make a direct, you know, comment to the Board of County Commissioners. Go ahead, David.
Yeah, just question as a matter of protocol. If you'd indicated that you're going to appeal this, it says that after an appeal is filed, the hearing goes before a county hearings examiner. It would seem that would be an appropriate.
Well, actually, Let me interject. Where it goes, when you make your appeal, we as staff people will review your appeal and make a recommendation to the Board of County, to the Director of the Department of Environmental Services, that person, Ron Benton, will review it, make his recommendation. If you don't agree with that recommendation, then you can appeal to the hearings examiner, and that goes then through more of a judicial process. And if you don't agree with that, then it goes to Superior Court.
So where I was going with this was where in that process would it be appropriate for us as a commission to weigh in with an opinion or a letter or statement either to Mr. Benton or to the county commission?
Or is there anybody?
Well, I'll give you my opinion.
Forgive me, but what I just heard you say was that staff would review, fine, and make a recommendation, go to Don Benton, and pass on.
Maybe we should get the city of Vancouver to chip in and we'll split the difference and they can pay part and the county can pay part. Why don't we put the blame on the city of Vancouver for being so brash as to charge this fee?
Well, they're getting their benefit from the city of Vancouver through the.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Why don't we split the cost with the?
This isn't the city of Vancouver what they're dealing with. This is Clark County.
They can get us a check.
Those are two.
Split the difference.
Okay.
I mean,
I think that part's going to work.
Well, I didn't think so either.
No, I hear what you're saying.
You got to shake the tree where the money is, and this is a tough budget situation, and I don't think we should be demonizing people that are trying to balance budgets.
So, correct. But this, what they're directing to is to exactly what Clark County, the effect that Clark County is having to them. City is city, county is county. Obviously, we don't all know how to work together perfectly yet, so that's the way it works. Melanie?
I am interested. And yes, having a work discussion on this, maybe get the information together and hear the more direct impact of each school district, how much it would cost them, in conjunction with staff saying, where is this money going to go once we collect it, and kind of working together to better understand each side. Because economically it makes sense on the one hand to charge on the fees, but on the other hand we've had this agreement going in place that we waive these fees and you guys have these nice programs, these good helpful programs to kids. So where the problem lies in is who pays for these programs, and so I'm curious what's going to happen with this, with these monies that are now Mr. Benton anticipates collecting, and how soon will he start collecting these?
Well, it's in deficit anyway, and it's going to be more down the road with the new state regulations, correct? Soon.
Yeah, clean water fees. We'll have to do some quick 101, but clean water fees go out on tax date, and that's first payments are due, and the first half tax payments are due, so the schools have them, so they have to pay half of their own. That's the rough time frame you're looking at. The funds that are collected from private properties or use impervious area as a unit to assess the fee. All the funds go into the clean water fund, and all it's all pooled and then budgeted out for operational programs, maintenance, and capital. So we can't trace the funds from that we receive from the school districts.
Not specifically.
These get spent for this, but we have a program budget, and you can see, I can show you how those funds are distributed.
Can I interject for just a second here? Susan had a motion here. It was kind of half coming through and then it got stopped. So I want to get our group back focused on this motion. Where are we at with this motion? So I put in my notes what we've done with this motion. Is it tabled? Is it moved forward? Or what are we talking
about? I move that we look at. We have an honest discussion about this shift of policy to charge the schools and see if it is congruent with what we have in our bylaws and our pledge, and come back with a recommendation to the Board of Commissioners.
I second.
Discussion. Do you need a motion to bring it up on the agenda for the next meeting?
I think it's going to require, because of the time essence, it's going to require a meeting prior to next.
I'm just trying to be clear. So we're wanting to maybe recommend that they
continue with the waiver, or were the boards going to recommend that we not? Is that kind of what we're
we need to have
to?
A discussion about the shift of policy regarding
right.
the pool. And I'm looking back over our bylaws, and I see a direct conflict with our pledge, and I see another conflict with on the vision and mission of the commission. The importance of the community's needs, seeking and recommending actions that can be implemented at a rate and with methods that are achievable with our conditions. I see this new policy as being directly in conflict with what we have written down in our bylaws and our pledge.
Well, we should probably take a vote on it. And then if the majority wants to make a statement in the policy situation, then the people on the board can register which way how they feel. I mean, if there's a majority that wants to send it down, that's fine. If there's naysayers, no votes on the deal, then those will duly be noted.
Sorry, this just isn't clear to me at all.
So,
we're jumping to a conclusion, but I thought that I just wrote down a discussion.
Right.
Do some fact finding, get information, and have a discussion without deciding what the conclusion is going to be beforehand.
That's right. Well, I don't think we know enough.
No, we don't have to clarify. Yeah. Are we going to say we're for you or against you? If we decide we are, we'll recommend it, but then that's going to need to be discussed. And that's, I think, where I'm coming from on this whole issue.
So
and if it's unanimous that we say yes,
we don't,
it's unanimous.
Right.
It's not.
And we, in anything that we put together, we can say, hey, we had three thumbs up and four thumbs down, and here's what the reason is. We can put that together,
sure.
File that in a report, give it to the Board of County Commissioners, give it to Senator Benton, and say, here's what the opinion of the Clean Water Commission is. And that's what Susan's looking for, I believe, at a secondary meeting, which was brought up, it was seconded, to go ahead and to move forward with making a recommendation from this board.
After
a discussion meeting. Okay?
Yeah,
that
sounds good.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
That's it?
Sounds good to me.
All right. So that was moved and seconded. So all in favor of having, and if we do a discussion meeting, I'm going to go ahead and schedule it right now. So when we know what it's going to be, the discussion meeting will be, can I add this to it? Or do I think
yes.
Is that legal?
Yeah.
So the discussion meeting will be the first Wednesday of next month, unless somebody can't make it.
I am gone the.
Then we'll change it.
I'm gone the first Wednesday through the following Thursday of April.
Okay, how about the second Wednesday of next month? Any problems?
Well, he's gone then too.
Okay, the third Wednesday.
Well, sorry, I mean just.
What, 16th?
Or right before? I just be dying.
You're right.
You want me there? I just.
Well, we want you there.
Well, then our next meeting is May anyway.
Well, can we just do it the last Wednesday of this month?
You can do late March.
Because I think we're pushing it out too far at this point for the school district.
I'm sure.
All right, last Wednesday of this month. Everybody good with that?
March 26th.
It's going to be, I'll set it up at Legacy, Salmon Creek Hospital.
March 26th? Yes.
6:30 p.m. Conference room is on the third floor. Up the third floor of the ICU unit.
It's right around the top.
I'd like to amend. If we're going to have a discussion, we need to have a discussion with valid information on what the mitigation is. What the impact? Because right now, from what I understand, the budget system is really what's driving this. Although it seems like some promises were made that were suddenly rescinded. But I would like to see us not just meet in a vacuum, but have some information that we can use to have a valid decision. Is this something we want to recommend or not? And why are we recommending it?
Well, right.
Rather than just to feel good.
Why was the letter generated? On what basis?
Okay.
Why was the time frame chosen?
Yeah, and what's the impact of the recommendation?
Right.
That would necessitate going back to
to Senator Benton and asking for...
Well, the staff, his staff is here.
He's here.
The staff is here. So I don't want to meet in a vacuum. I want to have a substantive meeting where we can make a valid and intelligent recommendation based on facts.
I think to Susan's point, though, is that we're deciding whether or not we want to just arbitrarily change the rule midstream with zero notice to the districts. I mean, I think that's a separate discussion. Is it a good policy or not? And we can recommend that. I think what they're asking for is, do we really want to just change gears midstream?
Would we be then discussing a policy change if we feel like it was necessary? Is that what we're doing?
Well, I think that could be supplemental to that, but that's ancillary to their request.
But the motion that's on the floor is to have a meeting tentatively on March 26th, 6:30 p.m., third floor legacy.
Right. Yeah.
To have a discussion with as much information as available to determine if the commission should make a recommendation or comments to the appropriate groups. Yeah. Is that what I'm hearing?
That's what you're hearing.
Okay. Sorry, I just need it condensed. I need it simple.
All right. Moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposition to it? Okay, that moves forward. All right, thank you very much. I understand the stress.
From a sympathy standpoint,
the surprise.
We're doing it. You guys run a business.
All right, we're going to have to.
One more thing about it.
Go ahead.
When these meetings are going to be over at Legacy, we have to have two other meetings. We were told by the board's office, anytime this group gets together, we have to do a formal announcement.
Okay.
So we'll have to announce it. I don't know what to do.
All right. Do it.
Well.
So.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much. Now, presentation discussion. Oh, any more comments from the, sorry. Got ahead of myself. Any more public comment?
Yeah, I'll wait.
All right. Presentation discussion. Stormwater code and management plan updates. We're running behind. We're probably going to dump a couple of items, and that was the Clean Water Commission communications with the public and update on the stormwater code manual so we can finish this stuff up here. So these are kind of minor things. We still have to select somebody for vice chair. We've got to get through this.
We want to nominate somebody?
We will.
Okay.
After this, we're going to do this.
I'm ready.
You ready?
To nominate.
No, you're ready to do it.
No.
Okay.
That's why I'm going to nominate.
All right. Let's go.
Okay. So I feel for the folks that are new to the commission because we've got a lot going on right now, and we're going to have to catch up. What we're going to discuss tonight is updates to processes that have been happening for a little while. The intent is to present those items to you. I have some handouts that are briefer summaries of some of these bigger documents that we're working on. So. I will, rather than try and bring everyone up to speed, I'll provide as much background as possible. We can take questions. I need to spend time with all of the new commissioners individually to explain what we do, to explain how the Clean Water Commission works, the relationship between this commission, our staff, and the commissioners, and all of our permit, all of our budgets, all about everything that we're doing. So, one thing about me, I've been managing the Clean Water Program for 6 years now. I manage all facets of the program. I also manage the county's legacy lands program, our sand and steelhead programs, and code enforcement. I know a lot of stuff. I talk really fast. So that's about what you can expect for the next half an hour. I am going to do something that I wasn't really planning on doing, and that's do a little bit of background. What we're going to talk about is our code. Our stormwater code and design manual. We are a phase one municipal stormwater permittee in the state of Washington. There are six. So phase one just means first. for under the Clean Water Act for having a permit for your stormwater system, for discharges from your system. There are six large municipalities in the state that have these, Seattle, Tacoma, and the counties of Pierce, Snohomish, King, and Clark. All the other smaller communities, like the one Kelly represents from Battleground, is a phase two community. They have a different permit than we have. Basically, the permit that we get from the state is they have the delegated authority from the EPA to administer the Clean Water Act, and they also have a state pollution control laws that require us to have a state waste discharge permit. They give us that permit in our municipal stormwater permit. It's got a lot of stuff in there for us to do. If you're familiar with industry or you're familiar with more on-site operations or manufacturing or something, you know, you can have a process, you can have a pipe, and that pipe discharges, you know, it's a point source. Our system is different because we own a very large, relatively large, municipal stormwater system with nearly 9,000 places where we discharge water from that system to wetlands, streams, and lakes or rivers. So we can't, you know, basically, we can't go to each of those outfalls and see what's going on and see if there's pollution and turn the big wheel and, you know, change the process to keep from polluting. When it rains, we discharge. So the premise behind the state's permit is it's a presumptive approach to compliance. It says, Clark County, we know you can't check all these points and we know you can't really control the process because it's concrete and asphalt and steel and it rains and goes out, right? So if you do everything in this permit, then we're presuming that you're complying with the Clean Water Act and complying with the state water pollution control laws. Okay? Everybody with me so far? Perfect. And so in that permit, we were issued a new permit in 2012. That permit became effective in August of 2013. And we're starting to implement what's in the new permit. The permit comes out from the state every 5 years, roughly. It's supposed to come out every 5 years. Sometimes it takes a little longer. And every time we get a new permit, the concept behind municipal stormwater permits is that they add a little bit more, and a little bit more, and a little bit more, because over time, we're supposed to be doing more and more and more to control pollution. So every time we get a new permit, nothing really goes away, or very little goes away from the last permit. You get more to do. One of the things that we were required to do in this permit we were just issued was to update our stormwater code for development projects and update our design manual for development projects. Okay, our permit requires us to have the authority to regulate development projects, and we need to regulate them in a way that is compliant with the state's standards for development projects, treatment, and the control of runoff from projects. So we do that through our code and manual. There are two primary pieces that give us the authority to regulate development projects. In the last permit, for the folks that were here, I can't give this whole presentation, but this was a presentation we gave to the Clean Water Commission last May. Okay. It was intended to talk about what's in the new permit, and I can share this with people. This is just the meeting minutes from that presentation. Bear with me. There are two elements, two primary changes as a result of the new permit. So focus on these. From a planning standpoint, we are required to do watershed scale stormwater planning. That's something we haven't had to do before. We can talk about that later. We're also required to update our stormwater code to incorporate the low-impact development standards that the state is putting forward, and also do a review of barriers in the entirety of the county's development code, the entirety of Title 40 for barriers to implementing low-impact development from a stormwater perspective. And that, for us, is the entirety of Title 40, including 4385, which is our stormwater code and our water quality code. And then we're also required to update our design manual to incorporate low-impact development principles and require it as a first thing to look at on a development project before you move on to more traditional methods. So we started that process. we met with the Board of County Commissioners in a work session just prior to meeting with this group last May. We told them what we were going, what we had to do, we were required to do it. There's a time frame in which we need to do it, but we wanted to get some buy-in on what it is we're going to try and do, because this is a big project. We're spending a lot of staff time, a lot of consultant time on trying to meet the deadlines for the permit. But we created a vision for this project, and that was Clark County Stormwater Runoff is managed to protect the vitality of our community's waterways, including our groundwater, rivers, and lakes, while supporting an economically vibrant and livable community. That's our vision. That's what we see. In order to do this, we want to create stormwater management regulations that comply with the state and federal regulations, while being flexible and tailored to multiple project types, and we're cost-effective, making low-impact development the preferred approach for stormwater management. The board agreed to this vision and mission. And then there were some basic goals, and I just want to run through these real quick because I think they're important to understanding when we are talking about what it is that we're doing, why we're doing it. We wanted to adopt regulations that comply with state and federal water pollution control laws and reducing polluted storm runoff. It seems kind of like a no-brainer, right? But the reason that I have that in the mission and we have it as a goal is the last time we went through this process was in 2009 during our last permit. And the Board of County Commissioners was unwilling to adopt a code and design manual that complied with state and federal laws. And I've spent the last 5 years in court. So we wanted the board to recognize this time that they may have to do some things that they don't necessarily want to do, and that is change our development codes that may make them more stringent, but we're required by our permit to do so, so that's the first goal that we have. They agreed to that goal. To meet the permit deadlines, to maximize exposure to the county, to minimize exposure to the county, and to regulatory and legal challenges, we have to have a draft code and design manual for stormwater to the Department of Ecology by the end of June 2014. Remember, we started, our permit was effective in August of 2013. We actually started working on this requirement before the permit was effective because we wouldn't have been able to meet the timeline. The Department of Ecology will review our regulatory documents, our code and manual. They'll say whether or not it's equivalent with the requirements of the permit, whether it meets the requirements of the permit and is equivalent with the state's manual. And if it is, they'll say, you're good to go. Go ahead and take this through the adoption process, which we will do. And they need to be effective. They need to be adopted by the board and effective by July 1st, 2015. So that's a time frame. It's a tight time frame. We basically needed to get started as soon as the permit was issued. We want to have an integrated set of development codes that protect resources from runoff, impacts of runoff, including the broad use of techniques that utilize low-impact development that's required by the permit. We want to tailor LID feasibility to local conditions where we can, and that was sort of saying the permit is pretty prescriptive on what we need to do, but where we can find opportunities to tailor those requirements to soil conditions or whatever on development sites, we will search for those opportunities. We'll spend time trying to find them. There are a few of those. I'll mention this aside. We wanted to create a single stormwater design manual for development projects that require engineering, including county roads. We also wanted to create a clear and concise small project guide for residential building projects where people aren't using engineers for the most part, that would be easier to navigate this fairly complex manual that we need to put together. And this was the sort of visual of what we were talking about and why we were going to do this. Just from a concept of simplification by subtraction, the existing process that we had in our current code and design manual looks like this. These MRs stand for minimum requirements. They're design elements that people need to incorporate. And we had, previously we had a code and then we had portions of the state's manual incorporated into our manual. Then we had our own sort of custom portions of the manual, and people actually use it. I mean, the people that use it don't mind the system where they have to have our manual, the state's manual, but it was a little complicated. So what we proposed last May was to consolidate everything into one design manual where people didn't have to go to the state's manual to get their design requirements, and we would do that in a series of three manuals for design elements for stormwater pollution prevention, essentially, and facility maintenance. The board liked this approach. They said, you know, simple is better. You know, if you can make it easier for people to get through this process, you know, we may have a thicker manual, which we do. It's 1,000 pages now, but consolidated. And we actually consolidated these three boxes together, so there's one manual. We have one piece of code, and we have one manual. We also told the board that we would do everything we could do to simplify the actual code language itself, and we've taken the stormwater code from roughly, I want to say 30 pages, I haven't counted them, but from 30 pages to about 8 pages. So now we had some redundant elements in code and manual before. Now it's, the code is pretty concise. It pretty much says, go to the manual, everything's in there, here's the stuff you have to submit, it has some legal requirements, some administrative requirements. So we've greatly simplified that. People probably don't even need to use the code very much anymore. Everything's going to be in the manual. What else? So we wanted to revise application and review processes to be streamlined where we could. They like that. Engage internal and external stakeholders. And so we put together a stakeholder advisory committee and a technical advisory committee last year. We're almost done with those committee meetings. They were mentioned earlier. We have one more stakeholder advisory committee meeting, and we just had our last technical advisory committee meeting this afternoon. I'll get into those in a little bit more detail, not the advisory committees, but the schedule. We may schedule another TAC. But we've had pretty good stakeholder involvement. We've been putting out a newsletter. Everything's been on our website. People feel fairly informed is the feedback that we're getting. And then provide sufficient training and education, because that's a huge challenge for us. We're going to be doing things fairly differently, so we have to work on that. This is the rough timeline. And we're about in here now. Submittal is here. This is what we've been doing for the last year, everything that I just shot at you in about 7 minutes. Questions? Okay. So the first thing we wanted to do was provide an update on the code and the design manual. Kind of let you know where we are with those things. That's the code. Probably should have handed these out before. The stormwater management plan. So I'm going to hand these out to you now. We can also send these to you in electronic format.
No, it's on the back side. I asked you if I could do that. So, project. Project. How does this all get together?
That's the plan. That's the manual.
Okay. So which one? We have this one. Okay. So then this one's different.
Okay. I'll keep talking while we pass these out.
Wait a minute, that was fine.
So we won't go through these.
I'm
just going to touch on a few of these things and then give you some time to kind of review these, digest some stuff, and get back to me. We're not actually looking for a recommendation from the commission tonight. There's not really anything to review. This is purely a staff update on the process to let you know when we're going to have opportunities for public input and when the board's going to be looking at this stuff, considering it for adoption. Okay? The first thing, so you should have three things. You should be getting three things.
Yes.
That look very, very similar. One says Clark County Stormwater Manual Update Project. Did you find that one?
Yes.
The intent of this is just to be a kind of a high-level summary of the changes proposed, because we basically wrote an entire new design manual that, like I said, is 1,000 pages. I expect very few people to read the design manual from cover to cover. It's not intended to be done. I will probably be one of the only people that actually reads it cover to cover. But this piece here is to highlight the changes in that document. So I'll just run through them quickly because we've touched on some. One is to create a standalone document. You know, we've done that. We've succeeded in doing that. It's formatted into four books, and so again, people are sort of going to be directed to their area of interest, and the way that we split these out is book one is pretty much the design portion of the manual. Book two is the BMP, which is best management practice. It's a detail. And so unless somebody's looking for best management practice details, they don't need to go into book two. Is everybody with me on this one, by the way? Okay. Book three is a pollution source control manual. We're just adopting that from the state's stormwater manual because we didn't think it was worth our time to rewrite it. And very few people are going to need to go into that portion of the manual. And then the operations and maintenance manual is the fourth piece. So if you kind of know what you want to do, you should be able to go straight to that book, and then there's chapters within there that you can kind of navigate to where you need to be. I'm pretty pleased with the way that the manual has come out. At least we've put it together so far. I think it's going to be very usable. Let's see. I'm going to skip content. Skipping updating. Let's see. Five is one of the most important changes in the manual. What we have here is implementation of on-site stormwater treatment utilizing low-impact development. One of the most significant changes in the CCSWM, which is the manual, is required to utilize LID where feasible. While we've allowed the use of LID in past years, such as bioretention, rain garden, permeable pavement, things like that, LID will now be required. In our book one, chapter three, we have an entire chapter that's devoted to walking people through these new requirements and the use of best management practices. That is something that we're required to do in the permit, and that's the most significant change in our design manual, other than the whole rewriting part. We updated submittal requirements. We've actually reduced what people need to submit, and we've changed where people need to submit those items, those design elements for their projects. It should be more efficient for them. Updated infiltration testing. That's one of those tailoring elements that we talked about. Our technical advisory committee, which is made up of local design engineers and developers, a few folks from cities, like Kelly, said that we want to be able to test infiltration of soils to determine LID feasibility in our own way. Our soils are not like the soils in the Puget Sound, where most of these procedures and design requirements were developed. And so we incorporated entirely customized infiltration testing for Clark County, which people seem to be happy with. Input from stakeholders, number eight, we've been maintaining a website, we've been sending out newsletters. Our TAC has met seven times. Our Stakeholder Advisory Committee has met, I think, four times. And like I said, has one more meeting, and we've been having a lot of meetings internally with our own staff in different departments to get input on this manual. The future input and schedule is probably the most important thing to talk about briefly. That is, now that we have our manuals together, we are looking to put it out for public comment for a four-week period starting in the middle of April. So we'll do a notice in the newspaper. We'll use email distribution lists like ARC can provide to us through the neighborhood associations. We'll hit our various internal advisory committees, but we'll make folks aware that this manual is going to be on our website and available for review. Like I said, I don't know how many people are going to want to review it. It's extremely technical, but it's important. So we'll have a four-week comment period in mid-May. We're going to get back together with the county commissioners in a work session. That isn't scheduled yet, but it will be in here, and we will present to them where we're at in the process, what the manual looks like. Hopefully the same thing we're talking about to you guys. But we will have already received public comments by then, so we can tell them what the feedback is from the public in mid-May. And then
we need to submit it to Ecology at the end of June. So they need to tell us this looks about okay, any changes that they want, and we'll have until the end of June to get it to the state in a formal submittal as required by our permit. And like I said before, if they like it, if Ecology likes it, then we have, they have about 90 days, so you know, July, about a quarter. Starting in October, we'll start the process to make any refinements that we need to make and also do a lot more public outreach and prepare it for adoption by the board. That's the update on our design manual project. We have one of these for the code as well. It talks about the summary of changes in the code. It'll say summary of changes for 4386, stormwater and erosion control. I won't go through that with you, but it's the same sort of thing, a high-level summary of how our code changed.
Anything in particular that stands out as being significant?
No, other than getting shorter, the code, you know, the main tool is the design manual. It's purely a revision, I think, to make it administratively easier to implement, and all of the significant changes are in the design manual. That's where all the requirements are. There are a couple pending policy decisions that we haven't made yet and we'll need to make relatively soon, and those may be in the code or the design manual, but something to think about. One is a strangely polarizing topic, but fencing, and not that kind of fencing, but like chain link fencing. There are some people that really don't like chain link fences around stormwater facilities. You know, people refer to them as stormwater prisons, and you know, we have fencing requirements in our design manual, mainly for safety, but we're considering making changes to those and relaxing our fencing requirements.
Have they developed any alternates to fencing?
Do you mean like different materials, Gary, or?
And I don't understand. I don't know exactly what I'm talking about. I'm talking about maybe filling it with large rocks and gravel or something like that. That's very permeable, rather than, you know, but you could put grass or something on top rather than having a fence or.
Is there any
alternatives?
Like
right now, my thing is full at this moment. Somebody walking by on the sidewalk literally could fall in and drown. So you have to have a fence around a lot of them because they fill up and then they drain slowly. So when you get a lot of rushing water, those things are full. And they're sitting right next to sidewalks. You've got little kids walking by on sidewalks. And does the county want to pay for a small child's death?
Some of the larger ones that don't have this steep slope are... don't need the fence.
Or next to sidewalks and things like
that.
What we heard so far from our TAC and we'll in the technical advisory committee and we'll likely hear from our stakeholder advisory committee is people aren't too put out by at least the project proponents aren't too put out by putting fences around facilities. People want us to look at some other options where they don't have to go through a code variance to put up a different type of fence. We don't want them to do that either. And what I communicated today, some of the things that I don't want to see and where we evidently have some disconnect is when I go out to two stormwater facilities that are abutting each other and I have 2 6-foot chain link fences running about this far apart, right next to each other. We end up taking, you know, somebody paid for 100 feet of fence that they didn't need to put up and we have to take it down anyway because the weeds are 6 feet tall. So there's something wrong with our current system when we're putting fences around everything that we can possibly think of.
Is it the cyclone fence they have an issue with? What about doing like a green coated one? You can see them. Is it unsightly or is it because they're worried about the rainwater going across the metal causing issues? I think it's simple as that.
In our, what we essentially specify is Washington Department of Transportation fence specs and we do allow for some fences depending on the configuration of the facility, whether there are steep slopes, whether there's anticipated standing water. You know, people can use different demarcators and barriers, you know. A line of rocks could keep a child from walking off the sidewalk into a swale. Of course, they may want to It may attract a child to climb up on the rocks and fall into the swim. You never know. But we are looking at writing in some more materials that people could use to improve the aesthetics.
Will that include height variation? In other words, you don't have to be 6 foot, you could be a 4 foot.
Yeah, we already have that. And it does. If you have a certain configuration in your facility, you can go to a 4 foot instead of a 6 foot.
Natural
but we're looking
barriers.
At changing it a little bit. What's that?
Natural barriers.
Right now, we don't allow any natural barriers. We only allow split rail, like wood split rail, which some people like, or a decorative type of fence if you're not required to have a fence. So if you want to put one up, you can. And then internally, our issue will be from a, you know, obviously a risk, you know, standpoint to the county. And from a maintenance standpoint, our operations folks like fences. Because when they're unfenced, people dump yard debris in them, and dump trash in them, and they run their dogs in them. And you know, so you've got to sort of balance that. You can lock them up and set them aside, and nobody wants them there, and nobody values them. And at the same time, if you allow people to use them, they may use them in ways that you don't want them to use them. So that's one thing that we're looking at, and we can get some feedback from you guys on that. The other is a potential change to the county's policy to take into public ownership stormwater facilities constructed as part of residential development. So you probably don't know, but when the county builds our own facilities, obviously we own and take care of those roads, parks, event centers, whatever we're doing. Commercial development projects, commercial, industrial, anything like that, they build and they maintain their own facilities. But for and multifamily apartment complexes, they have to build and maintain their own facilities, the landowner. We have a policy for residential development that it's up to the developer to decide whether they want to dedicate it to the county or whether they want to keep it private. Essentially, it's along the lines of everything should be public. This is the underlying intent behind the policy. Everything should be public, but if you want it to be private, you can keep it private. And the reason people do is they want to incorporate it into common areas as part of, you know, developments that HOAs maintain, various reasons that they may want to keep it private, but that's an example. And if they don't, you know, the county won't maintain. So there's one I just looked at recently. It's a park, it's trails, it's a grassy area, and then there's a stormwater facility over here. It's not on a parcel that they could dedicate to the county during the development process. And so the county won't take on the responsibility to maintain a private trail and park and grass area as well as a stormwater facility. So they have to make it private, create an HOA, collect fees, and do their own maintenance. That's the current policy. And what that does is people give us stormwater facilities. It's a very common approach. In fact, most people probably use that approach to take them on for public ownership and maintenance from residential subdivision projects. But it gives you an ever-increasing inventory of stormwater infrastructure that you have to maintain. And everybody pays. So every landowner pays into that collective pool, like we were talking about with the schools, and we're allocating money. And you also, you know, so you can have one subdivision on one side of the street, and they're private, and they're maintaining their own facility. And you can have a public one on the other side of the street, and that facility is being publicly maintained, and everybody is paying $33 a year. But that's just the way it's set up. We don't collect system development charges. When someone wants to give a facility to the county, we just accept that. That's actually what most people do.
The street I live on, we have 11 parcels, 2.5 to 5 acres,
right,
south of Battleground. We have our own detention facility.
There you go.
That we maintain. It's just the way it was originally set up.
Yeah.
It's about an acre in size.
Yeah.
And it was a couple of years ago. It was quite a task.
What's the name of it?
Windsong Acres. Off 137, but so we actually got all the neighbors together, and we went out there and we did the whole nine yards, and we recently sort of put out. But interesting, you know.
Yeah, so you know, that, again, that's sort of
the inspector on over there.
The inspector's been there.
The gate closed.
We could look up the inspection report. But that's something that we're working through. That's coming from, you know, the concept is coming from the county commissioners and from our department director to explore this. Like I said, we talked about it with our technical group today. We'll talk about it with stakeholders tomorrow and get some feedback. one proposal that is sort of in the middle between the public and private is everything is private. It's required to be private unless if you absolutely want it to be public because you don't want to form an HOA, you don't think there's a market for people that want to live and belong to an HOA, you can make it public, but there's a system development charge. So you write a check to the county up front.
Is that a one-time fee?
Yeah. It'll be during, it'll just be like impact fees, but you'd actually have to pay them. But that's another concept that we're considering.
So what happens when HOAs go away? They're not forever.
They don't maintain their facilities, mm-hmm. and so when we inspect them, which we've only started doing relatively recently, believe it or not, particularly for private, what we had considered private facilities, we basically bring everyone together in the subdivision and get them to take action, much like you know, Dick was talking about. We let everyone know that they're jointly all responsible for the stormwater facility, and they need to find a way to get it maintained.
How much time do you give them?
If they ignore us and tell us to go away, about 60 days until we get their attention. When we get their attention, it could be a couple years. It depends on what's wrong. And when we've had some facilities that need tens of thousands of dollars worth of work, and there is no HOA. So, you know, you get the 100 people together that live in the subdivision, and your first meeting, you get 11 of them. And these are people who are like, no, not my problem, I'm not going to do it. And then you send another letter that says, the county will go in and do the maintenance, and then we'll lien everyone's property for the cost of the maintenance. And then the next meeting, you have 75 people.
Mm-hmm.
And they tend to, you know, take action. We're flexible in the process because we know that it's hard. But that's a risk. We definitely would need to revisit our HOA language in our platting code and make it stronger.
In your what code?
Platting. Like platting subdivisions.
Okay.
That's where
platting.
The requirements for platting. I'm sorry. That's where we would have to strengthen that. Otherwise, we'll spend a lot of time chasing people around trying to maintain facilities. So again, that's sort of those two high level summaries can give you nuts and bolts. The design manual and the code will be out relatively soon for public comment, and then by the time we get together back again in May, you know, we'll be able to provide another brief update on what we're hearing from people. In the meantime, you know, definitely get a hold of me if you have questions, or like I said, I need to meet with the new and existing members if you want to meet, talk about it, we can do that. So, rapidly shifting gears, the one we haven't talked about. The stormwater management plan update. The county is required to, so we have this big thick permit, we have to do all this stuff. There's probably 100 individual required performance items in the permit that we need to track, make sure we're doing them. But we also have to write what's called a stormwater management, we have to have a stormwater management program to implement the permit and meet the requirements. And we have to write a stormwater management program plan that the public can review and the Department of Ecology can review and see how we're going to comply with our permit. Now, that can be a relatively succinct and dry document. Back in 2010, we decided to write a document that would actually be useful for people as a reference for how the Clean Water Program works. So there's an administration section in Chapter 1, and then there's the sort of nuts and bolts in Chapter 2 that says this is how we're complying with the permit, and some stuff in the last chapter that talks more about other stormwater issue type stuff. But it's a decent read. It's a reference document. Again, like I said, I doubt most people have read it cover to cover. I have several times. And we can get you hard copies of those if you want them. Otherwise, it's on our website.
This last week, Jane sent you guys were on a distribution list and should have received an email from Jane referencing this particular document.
Okay, so it is on, so I'll mention we're required by our permit to update this plan annually. And we would probably do that anyway, change policies, change procedures, you know, update what programs have started, what programs we no longer do. A lot can change in a year, particularly in between permits. So we are in the process of updating our plan for 2014. And this document kind of lays out the background of why we're doing what we're doing, provides the link to the document on the web, a rough schedule for updating the plan. We are in the March 5th bullet, the third one down. Review this SWMP is the Stormwater Management Plan. We call it the SWMP. Review the SWMP. Update at the Clean Water Commission meeting. That's what we're doing now. By March 10th, we'll submit a staff report to the board to put it on consent. March 25th, we're shooting to get it in front of the board for them to adopt. And March 31st, we need to post it on the county's website. Below that on the back are the changes, sort of a summary of changes that we're making to this couple hundred page document. The most important thing that I think I'll talk about, I mean, a lot of it's administrative, a lot of it's changing requirements that are in our new permit. If you look at number four for under stormwater infrastructure management on the back page, we're removing the development and redevelopment flow restoration program. That was a program for us to do capital projects to make up for flow control on development sites. If you read the paper, that's what we lost in state court and we lost in federal court, and we just settled a lawsuit about that program a couple months ago. So we don't run that program anymore because it's been because the courts say it's illegal, so we take it out of our stormwater management plan. That's one of the changes. We also have a capital program where we build new stormwater facilities to make up for pollution, to help control pollutants in areas where we can't control them with other methods in our permit. And so in our stormwater management plan update, we put a new capital plan in there every time we update it. So there's a new capital plan in there. And also the requirements and schedules for what we've already talked about today, the municipal code, the stormwater design manual updates, and our watershed planning updates. Under number five, outreach and education, we eliminated the Watershed Stewards Program, as was mentioned earlier in this meeting, and we updated information reflecting current practices, such as linking to the Clark County Green Business Program, Green Schools, and Green Neighbors that are done through our Solid Waste Program that help us comply with the requirements in our permit. And we can spend a whole other meeting talking about outreach and education, so we can do that another time. Under number seven on assessment and monitoring, we've eliminated our stormwater needs assessment program, which is a watershed characterization program. It helped us do capital planning and helped us kind of keep tabs on how watersheds were doing. It's not a requirement of the municipal stormwater permit, and so I've been directed to eliminate that everything that is not required by the permit, so we eliminated that program. We also eliminated the long-term index site monitoring program, which we've been doing for a while, due to funding issues.
Could I just ask a question there on number seven?
Sure.
Eliminating those reduces costs.
Yeah.
Is it necessarily, you know, obviously, is it necessarily good thing to do, or is it sort of you're going to pay the price later?
In my opinion, they're good things to do. Primarily, from our watershed assessment program, gave us what I call market information. It gives us information to make good decisions. Our permit doesn't require us to get that information to say where do we build capital projects, that type of thing. But without going out and assessing the conditions, we're shooting in the dark a little bit, and we can still do it. The long-term index site was more monitoring stream health. And in order to say what the health of your streams are and what direction they're going in, you need a lot of data. You guys know. So we've had, this was a 10 or 11 year program that we've been collecting data that we're no longer doing it. So we have a good sense for the health of our streams, and we have kind of an indication of what direction they're heading in, but going forward, we're no longer able to afford it. For me, you know, our clean water program's mission is to, you know, protect resources and make water cleaner, and so if somebody asks us if we're doing that, I don't really know what to tell them anymore. We did our report. Our last report was in 2011 or 12. We'll just have to use that until we can pick it up.
So these would be a couple of examples of things one might use if one was making a pitch that the fee structure needs to rise from a 15-year-old $33 something higher. Yes. Cite these things as.
Yeah, I mean, I'd put them in the category of, you know, you will struggle to afford the things you have to do in the permit, but the permit also doesn't cover everything that people may want. People ask us all the time things that they want. It's, you know, as Brian brought up earlier, I mean, you have to make choices, and sometimes, you know, you can't afford all the things we want, and these are sort of in the nice to have. I put them in the smart to have category, and then there are a few other things in the nice to have, but.
So to do monitoring,
we are.
The state wanted to take that over.
Don't get me wrong, we still have to spend a lot of money on monitoring. It's monitoring stormwater outfalls, it's monitoring the effectiveness of certain best management practices. We'll spend hundreds of thousands of dollars on that. We fought hard. In fact, we appealed this permit permit when it came out to the Pollution Control Hearings Board that we should get credit for our stream monitoring program because it helps us keep track of the things we're doing and how they're working, and we didn't win that appeal.
We have, this has been like one of the founding elements going back 15 years ago. We have one of the commissioners, what was his name, Mark, used to say, we need to show the folks in the county where's the beach.
Oh, yeah.
Willie Burlett.
Yeah.
He'd pound his fist on the table and say, where's the beach? He wanted to be able to show the county citizens the health of their water stream, you know, and monitor it throughout the years and say, it's a result of so-and-so. So this was a particular element that speaks to the accountability to the local folks. We felt obligated to do that.
Can you compile a list of, I forgot your term, really nice to have versus good to have, so that as we're visiting or thinking about things, I can be on the same page saying, with you, I don't know, looking at these lists, that's a great list and I really like what you put up, but being new, I'm not sure what your top priority would like to have back is, and that might be helpful. There's nothing at this point I can do, but being new, at least I can read through them and get a better understanding of what you'd like to get back and in the future.
Sure. I mean, we can talk. I think as we meet, and if you guys have time to meet with me and we can run through the stormwater management program, you can see what we do, and we can have conversations about, you know, what other things we could be doing if we had the funding. Absolutely. Last couple things I'll mention. All the timelines, we have timelines for meeting permit requirements throughout. Those were all updated. Graphics, you know, whenever you let people play with stuff, they want to change pictures and update maps and
of course
do things like that. So there's a few of those, adding hyperlinks, stuff like that. This is it doesn't say how long the comment period is, but we need to adopt this. We need to have board adoption by the end of the month. So we're doing a 2-week, roughly, comment period. We rarely get comments on our stormwater management plan. Believe it or not, maybe I'm just a nerd and I think people should read it. But a couple weeks, and so take a look at that and look at these summaries. And let me know if you have any questions. We'll be back in May.
All right.
Orange Creek.
Very good. All right, moving right along here. After we drop a couple things out of the agenda here, we need to go to the nomination and the election for the vice chair.
What I'd like to do, or maybe what you can do, is I will do this by Robert's Rules of Order. Robert's Rules of Order gives us an opportunity to. Anyways, Robert's Rules of Order gives us an opportunity to basically say who would like to serve as the vice chair. And so what we'll do by doing that, we'll ask people who would like to be the vice chair. And then after that, what I've got here is a little sheet of paper that is what we'll do the elections. So at this point in time, I'm just going to leave it to you to say, but basically what we're going to look to do is we're going to ask who would like to be the vice chair. That'll be through the end of this year, and then we do this whole thing again in November for chair and vice chair. So,
okay. So I have a question for you right before we do that. So, since we
don't know each other,
what do we have to do to change our bylaws to change the date on the chair and vice chair to after February? Whatever the date is when you get appointed, we'll do that.
The 28th.
Yeah. Because going through this after we already nominated somebody and then they didn't get reappointed, and now we're going through this whole process again, is a little bit frustrating.
Right, it's frustrating.
In fact, I had some discussions with both, Phil and Melky about it. So, anyway, that being said, we'll move on. But we do need to address that. So, do I have any nominations?
Well, what's the responsibilities?
Huh?
What's the responsibilities?
You just hang here and not here.
That goes over there.
Bang, bang.
Pretty much that's it. So there isn't a whole lot of
The good news is Jim is mostly always here.
I show up every time.
So, chances of him having to do any vice chair activities would be minimal. But if Jim, the chair, is not here, you would be in charge of
your bylaws for responsibility. So when you go to your bylaws, you have a section in there, which is Section 4, Part C, Vice Chair, the roles and responsibilities of the Vice Chairman. And basically, it's all the stuff that the chairman does. That is, go through the presentation of the packet materials. Go through and make sure there are people introduced. Introduce the audience. Talk about the different topics. Make sure that the notes are taken. Or taken and then are approved, and then just go through the rest of the agenda. And we as staff will be here to help guide that person along the way so that you're not going to get off target or off track.
It's pretty basic. So, back to any nominations or. But Brian, you have to. Don't disappoint.
Gary Schaefer.
Okay.
Excellent.
All right. There's a nomination. Do you accept that nomination?
I accept the nomination.
All right.
So what we have to do now is do a vote. Is there anybody else who wants to be selected?
Do I hand them out?
No, it's going to be
ballot.
Let's go by ballot.
Just trying to speed things up.
We can't do a show of hands vote. I don't care who knows they vote for.
Well, Robert's Rules of Order say ballot, right? We want to do a show of hands.
But if
he's unopposed.
He's unopposed.
Yeah, he's unopposed.
All right.
Thank you.
Let's all vote. Okay? Thank you. All right.
What about selection?
Huh? Oh, yeah, we do need that. There's one more meeting for the stakeholders advisory group. What day is that? The 13th. Who wants to attend that? Any volunteers who would like to go to that?
Where and when?
It'll be at the elections.
It'll be Office of Elections across the way from here, off the parking lot. It'll be upstairs.
On the 13th?
What time?
No, what time?
Four.
No, that one's later, isn't it?
No.
Is it the same time?
Yeah.
I was doing it, and then Nancy left, and then, so I wasn't went to the TAC, so I don't know.
What is the name of the meeting again?
It's called the Stakeholder Advisory Committee. And they're the group that looks at, from basically a practical sample of all the stuff that Ron talked about tonight. So
there's,
there'll be,
the, there's the one meeting left, in essence.
Yeah.
And you don't want to go, Mr. Carlson?
I'm going, I've been going to the TAC meeting.
He's on the TAC meeting.
Oh.
So
is there somebody
really
from this group that's interested in being a representative of Clean Water Commission to the stakeholder advisor?
What day of the week is that?
Sorry?
What day of the week is that?
It's next Thursday.
I
have the same, but it may be different.
It would be a great learning opportunity.
It is a great learning opportunity.
Yeah. You'd be happy to have somebody else go.
Well, I mean, you can sit in the
I'll go if you want.
That'd be great, Gary. I would recommend, so Gary's volunteered, you go to it, to the last one. It's, you know, as you, everybody's trying to come up to speed, which Melanie, I heard from you today, you know, give me these things on here. There's a lot of information that we all try to pull in, but you guys are going to be trying to pull in.
Forward the details?
So it's a good one to go to, listen, get a feel for what's going on with your, to help put everything together in your mind on all the processes we're going through. That's about all I can say about it. Wouldn't hurt if anybody had time to show up there and just see what was going on with it. So, yeah, a few notes on it, Gary, and report to us on next meeting. That'd
okay.
be great.
Next meeting, was it 26th or the 7th? 26th?
No, that would be that's
would be the main meeting.
The main meeting, which is on May 7th.
Okay.
Now we're skipping the. We don't have any more public comment. Any public comment? Go ahead, Art.
Thank you. I want to thank the staff and the cast members that I've worked with for the, 15 years we've been coming to this thing, for the work that they've done and the dedication they've had. I'm more than willing to work with any of the commissioners or with the commission in general as far as history is concerned. If you want to be brought up to date on anything, I can give you some pretty good background on why certain things were done. I don't feel bad, by the way, of not being reappointed. I had said for the last three times that they needed some new faces and some younger ideas on it. I don't know that anybody, yeah, you're all younger than me.
How kind.
regarding certain aspects that you're going to be running into, and one of them is the homeowner association and their privatization of their bioswales. One of the things that I would like to see recommended to the county commissioners, which will probably never occur because it may have to go up to the state, would be a mandatory fee for homeowner associations before the county allows a developer to actually form a homeowners association or form a development run by a homeowners association. I've been involved in starting, I think, 6 separate homeowner associations in different developments around the county where the homeowners swore they were never informed of CC&Rs, had no idea they were responsible for any of the common areas around them, and really didn't want to pay annual fees, so probably 1/3 of them did, and they carried the load for the rest of the people. Big turmoils, constantly. I'm a little disappointed in the change in policy from the county commissioners regarding staff positions on the clean water program or in the clean water program. If you remember, Susan and Virginia, we discussed that more than once, that you know it would be polite of them to even come before you and say, we want to create a new position. If, in fact, the budget is a problem, then I would question why a new position was created for in excess of $65,000 on the board or on the, in the clean water program. That could probably cover what the school district is going to be paying, and we will be paying back to the school as a property owner. You have to decide as a commission what kind of a program you want. You are unique. You really, truly are unique. you can do just the minimum amount to cover the NPDES permit, or you can do what's necessary to clean up the water in Clark County. You're very aware of that. You know, and it's the same thing around your house. You can do minimum maintenance just to keep the house going. But if you want to keep the house in good order, then you have to spend the money. If you don't have enough money, then you better get a second job in order to find the money. And in this case, we have kept our word with the people in Clark County for 15 years and not raised the fee. We are one of the lowest in the country, if not the lowest. It's been proposed to the commissioners, and if you would like to get a copy of last year's annual report, a letter from the chairman, Nancy Olmstead, specifically stated to the county commissioners that it was extremely necessary, if they wanted to run this program properly, to upgrade the annual fee. Nobody that I have talked to in the public has ever said that the fee is too high for the amount that they're receiving once they find out what the clean water program does. Very few people you talk to, well, if you ask them, what's the grate in the street for and where does that go, know that it goes to the nearest outfall into the nearest stream. Most people will answer, well, it goes to a treatment facility. It doesn't, you know. And that's the extent of knowledge that the public has in the program. Once you explain it to them, once you explain what bioswales are, they accept it and say, oh, no, that makes sense. And they also realize the amount of money that it takes to do it. But again, you have to decide what the program should be. Do you just want to meet the minimum requirements for the NPDES permit, or do you want to wait for a catastrophe to happen? It's up to you. Again, I'm more than willing to work with anybody or with any committee, and I have a vested interest in this program just as a property owner and as a member of the Neighborhood Association Council for Clark County.
All right.
And I thank you again for your dedication.
Thanks, sir. We do have one thing that we have to pass off from Art. We're going to deal with that probably maybe at this next meeting, hopefully. But Art was the liaison between the Arts Commission and the Clean Water Commission. And that will be explained a little bit more in detail at the next meeting on what that is and some of the things that they want to accomplish in the Arts Commission and how they relate to clean water and what they want to do in there. But we're going to have to make that transition, all right, and get that done. We're running out of time. I'm going to briefly go over what we're going to go next meeting. So we've got an annual report we've got to prep up real quick, okay? There's only three people who are left who are on this, on the Clean Water Commission from last year. So if you have anything to interject on the annual report on there, you need to get it to me in an email. Normally, in the past, Nancy took care of most of the annual report. Dave Morgan took care of it all, interjected on it. This year, I will rewrite the annual report. I will probably plagiarize some of last year's annual report, and I will interject anything that belongs in there, what you want to see in there, and I will present it twice. I will present it briefly when we all show up on the 26th. I'll have it gelled together, and I'm going to bring it back again on the May 7th meeting, and then on May 28th or whatever it is, we're going to go out and we're going to present it at a work session to the Board of County Commissioners on Wednesday at 10 o'clock in the morning, roughly. So that's kind of the timeline on the annual report. I got about 30 more seconds. So the other thing, we're going to go over the bylaws really, really quick on there. Maybe we can take a look. People think about making.
Mr. Carlson.
Go ahead.
Okay. You all received a new binders this time. So I did put a copy. The very first one is how you guys can contact each other. If there's anything wrong on that contact sheet, please email me and I'll get you guys out new ones. The second one is the pledge that Susan referenced. The third one's the ground rules. And then there's a tab for the annual report. That has the prior year's annual report, so you guys can reread that, and then you guys can give Jim your recommendations based on what you remember from last year and then that previous annual report. And then finally is the copy of the bylaws in there that you guys were going to go over. So
spectacular. Thank you for doing this.
So that covers the annual report. We're going to review and approve the bylaws. And I'll be looking to make a change on when we do the nomination.
Question? Why am I the only person from East County?
Does East County only need one?
Everyone's appointed by the Board of County Commissioners. I don't know.
What?
There's just so many of us. It seems that it should be another one.
I'm technically outside the incorporated Vancouver, so maybe they're counting me.
Well, on the other hand, you're here for 2 years. Some of us are only here for 1 year. You have twice that.
I must be extra special at that.
So the other thing, we're like out of time here, but I do want to go back over the other swamp, okay? I'm going to go over this really brief because this is going to come back up again, but I'm going to explain it in like 30 seconds. You're going to get the really quick overview. So we came up with a project. I've been down and I've talked to both Medora and Melky about it. Melky really loved it. Dave talks quite a bit. I had to keep him focused on it. He understands. So a swamp, the acronym SWAMP, which I came up with, stands for Stormwater Association Multi-Use Project, okay? The overall idea behind this thing is that we never work together to create any synergy between the city, between the county, between the private developer, between institutions like schools, you know, you name all the above, but we don't work together. Classic examples of that are like out on 219 where the individual state projects are. So a swamp is the following things for sure. The swamp is multi-use. Okay, multi-use meaning it's used by multi-agency, multi-developer. The swamp is multi-purpose, meaning that there's a walking trail. Maybe it doesn't have the gate all the way around it. You know, a walking trail through it. It's a stormwater facility, okay, but it could be a golf course. I don't know what it could be. It could be all sorts of different things. But it's multi-purpose. And the idea is that we, on the swamp, the overall idea is that somehow we build, we're going to identify what the barriers are, okay, for creating a swamp. What the barrier is between you working for the state, me working for the county, you working for the city, to sit there and build a stormwater facility on multiple jurisdictions, all right, and making it cost-effective. This is part of the overall idea of this strategy is to reduce the cost by cost-sharing. Okay, a swamp is also, very important, a system. Okay, it's a complete, it's an infrastructure system. It's not just a pond sitting somewhere. It's a system that works between multiple agencies. So that's the overall idea of the swamp concept of it. I will be getting with the City of Battle Ground. If you guys are still interested in doing that, then we're going to have different projects where we will reach out to the state. Okay, I've already talked to Benton. I said, hey, look, I handed him this thing. I said, when you go up there, when he gets back from back down here.
Mr. Benton or just Benton?
I'm
getting really tired. I noticed all right, that we had some issue with Ann Rivers and Don Benton and their issues. I mean, what is
so
the lack of
respect? Brian, I'm going to tell you something right now. I was not derogatory. We're not going to sit there. This is not going to get into any political stuff down here. We're here to work on a project, all right? When I was sitting talking to Commissioner Melky, he referred to Don Benton as Benton, all right?
Okay.
I'm sorry I insulted you. I'm not disrespectful.
Issue. Somebody had issues with Senator Benton and Ann Rivers.
Okay.
About what?
We can
to do with this commission.
I had some complaints and phone calls from my neighbors.
You know, now we're going to have another meeting because Senator Benton had an issue with these. We're going to have a meeting about these fees. We're going to try to make some kind of political witch hunt about, oh, Don Benton is charging.
No, we're not going to make rules. I tell you what, here's what's going to happen when things get out of hand down here and we get off topic. I can call the meeting right now and everybody be happy because it's over. We get off topic and things start going out of hand during early in the regular meeting, boom, it's going to get adjourned, all right? We're going to stay on task on this. We're not going to make any witch hunt out of Don Benton or anything else. I want to get together and come up with a consensus. Everybody can have a different opinion. It's going to be sent to the Board of County Commissioners. It's like, I don't know what it's going to look like yet. We haven't worked on it together to come to any consensus. It may say, hey, look, we totally understand what you're doing, but you're under a contract. We think you should keep it till the next year and then remove it. That sounds totally fair. But we will work on that together,
okay?
And we're not going to take a bunch of political sides in here, all right? We're going to work on clean water commission stuff.
That's what my point about reading this last month's
I think that the problem here is not necessarily Benton, but that he wears two hats. So perhaps for the purposes of our Clean Water Commission, Benton would be fine.
So, yeah, so because I don't know which one it is.
You don't know where
he
is.
Senator Benton, I gave him those things on the agenda. I saw him up at Jolly's restaurant where we met, as a matter of fact. I handed it to him, and I said, hey, you know what I want you to do? Would you please do this for me, Don? I called him Don. He called me Jim. That was all right. I said, will you go up there, and I want you to think about this. And I gave this to Commissioner Mulk to do. I want you to think about this. I want you to identify barriers that you see in here. I want you to give them back to the Clean Water Commission. And then what we want to do on it is work on how to create opportunity and make recommendations to the Board of County Commissioners on how to remove barriers to sit there and work on projects together to reduce the overall cost. And that's the goal. All right? So, with that being said, this meeting is welcome, everybody.
Thank you.
All right,
Jim. Rob, you're signing.
Oh, she's collecting her name tag.